everyone. This is Gordon W2TGT, Bergen Amateur News Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Well, that's a pleasant answer. Always like to hear that there's no problems. Alrighty, this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. That is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.835 NJ2BS. Repeat, Commuter Repeater, Venture Crew 7373. And you are more than welcome to participate. This net is about having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the natural sciences and arts that underlie our hobby, and of course, about what we do with our hobby and the opportunity to put things up for sale, swap, or trade, want to that. We encourage you to participate, even if you don't have one of those things pending, because it helps us guide the conversation if we know who the audience is. All too often, you know, we struggle to figure out what the audience wants because the audience is listening but doesn't. That's very frustrating, to be honest. So I would hope that you'll check in one way or t'other. In any case, drop in for a second. Sorry, I had to convince my dog to get out from underneath my feet. Anyway, as I said, the purpose of that is really about amateur radio in general. I hope that you'll participate. In any case, we also are supported by a closed Yahoo group, so you won't get called ComTech Group, Charlie Oscar Mike, Echo Echo, Charlie Hotel, Alfa Romeo, Oscar Uniform Group. Yahoo groups, so feel free to check that out. If you can't find it for any reason, like to participate, just shoot me an email at .net and I'll be happy to add you. Let's see. Alrighty, so with no further ado, talk about how we check in. We check in our call sign, our name, anybody have a question, comment, for sale, swap, combination of those things, and we do it by call sign group, one by one. Matt Burton here doesn't go crazy. So, stations whose call signs begin with the letter Alpha, you're first tonight. Call K2BAR. Okay, we are alphaless. Oh, how about November?
Net control. November 2, Sierra Hotel Oscar. No traffic.
Good evening, Holly. Welcome aboard. Any other Novembers? Alrighty, how about Whiskies?
NJ2BS, repeat.
W2, Don, with two comments.
Good evening, Don. I got you covered. Problem. Any other Whiskies?
Whiskey Alpha 2, India Sierra Echo, Bob, and no comments.
Okay, Bob, very good. I'll have a mesh update for that in a moment after we deal with comments and such by Don and others. All right, any other Whiskies? Okay, how about Kilos?
K2BAR. This is KD2BKD, Bob in Park Ridge. A question.
Very good, Bob. I note that you have a question. Any other other Kilos?
K2BAR, K2BAR, no guys, no questions.
Alright, I didn't quite get that call sign. K2 is something OFD, is it?
Oscar Foxtrot Charlie.
Okay, and the prefix?
Kilo 2, Oscar Foxtrot Charlie.
Okay, Bob. Alright, sorry about that. Anybody else with a Kilo? Alrighty, any other stations, any call sign?
That's control. KD2, OAI, Kilo Delta 2, Oscar Alpha India, standing by to listen.
Okay, very good, KD2, OAI. What's your name and where are you?
My apologies, the name is Rich, and I'm in Fort Washington, Long Island. Good evening.
Rich, welcome aboard, nice to have you. Anybody else, any call sign?
Control. control. Not sure if I'm reaching you, but we copy Bravo, Jason from Quantic.
Jason, we got you, KD2, Oscar, Bravo. Louis, I thought you sort of sound a little like Rich.
Sound a little like
Jason,
but not a problem.
What are your intentions, Jason?
The first time.
Oh, welcome aboard. Very good. All right. Both of you, welcome to Amateur Radio. I see you're relatively new on the call sign list, so that's pretty awesome. Always love to hear that. We may ask you some questions in a little bit, so don't go far. Anybody else checking into the net tonight, please call KTBAR. All right, let's get to the heart of the matter then. Don, W2JEK, it's your ball, KTBAR.
All right, K2BAR in the net, W2J, good evening, everybody. First thing I want to announce is that Barra will be running its next VE test session on Friday, November 17th at 7 p.m., held at the Township of Washington's Municipal Building, Hudson Avenue. Dollars, we want a driver's license or something, forms of non-photo, a copy of that license, iPods or anything like that. Special equipment, RN number, or those of us member of the organization, power 5 watts.
Very good. Anybody have any questions for Don? Alrighty, you going to make another announcement, Don?
No, I took care of both things, Gordon. Over.
Okay, I do want to remind everyone that this weekend is the Barra Fox Hunt, the Fall Fox Hunt. And they gather in the parking lot of Westwood High School in Washington Township, in the parking lot where we have the Hamfest, where we had the Hamfest just a week ago. So, or less than a week ago, so do keep that in mind. And, you know, hopefully you'll enjoy that. You meet at noon on Sunday. 12 noon on Sunday is the magic time. And hopefully you'll be able to join us for that adventure. You don't need much, and if you don't have anything, don't worry, you'll be paired up with other people. So even if you have nothing other than, an HD and such, you can just show up at noon and they'll match you up. In fact, you might want to show up a few minutes before noon, maybe quarter of. So that's something to think about. So, anywho, be aware of that. And what else? Next weekend, not this coming, but the following weekend, is Jamboree on the Air for the Scouts. And, I think it's going to be quite a wonderful exercise. And hopefully people will turn out for that and talk to the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and the Boy and Girl Guides all over the world. Drop it. Just, I know we have some people who are involved in scouting, yours truly included. Just want to make a couple of clarifying points, because it's very clear to me that the media does not know how to understand the recent actions of the Boy Scouts of America to admit girls. So, number one, Cub Scout dens will either be boys or girls, but not both. Number one. Number two, and that will begin in the fall of 2018. And then in the fall of 2019, there will be a program for girls, key point, a program for girls, which will allow them to progress to the Boy Scout ranks, or the, whatever they call it at that point, for the girls, and they will attain the rank of Eagle Scout. There's been a lot of questions as to whether or not that's due to declining membership and things like that. No. And I would definitely argue, as a father of three Eagle Scouts, that I think this is a good thing. My sons benefited from the program, and I think girls could too. I think they developed separately and distinctly, because girls have a different maturation cycle than boys do. So I think the opportunity to
engage in the kind of activities that the Boy Scouts offers that are distinctly different than what the Girl Scouts offer. Just like the Boys and Girls Clubs and the YMCA and Camp Fire and 4-H are all different, I don't view it as pitting one against the other. I just think that the programs are fundamentally different. You know, the Girl Scouts USA does not have a facility like the Summit, like Philmont, like Seabase, like the Boundary Waters, not to mention various council facilities around the country. They just don't. And so they offer a different program. And so I just think that, girls and boys develop differently at different times. And that does not mean they shouldn't both be afforded the same kinds of opportunity in a way that's respectful of their development cycles and things like that. My own experience when I've seen venturers and explorers together in a co-ed format, what tends to happen is that the girls do all the organizing, the boys do all the tongue wagging and the and drooling and buggy lugging. And they actually don't do any of the organization and leadership, which they need to do. But for a given 15-year-old boy, or a given set of 15-year-old boys, a given set of 15-year-old girls, the girls will be generally more mature, more organized, etc. So, hence why I think that each program has its value, and I suspect that the Boy Scouts of America will develop a fine program for young women that will allow them to attain an Eagle Scout rank that will be every bit as credible as that which is earned by a boy today. And that's my point. No watering down of standards. I think it'll be fine. To that note, our tampering on the air station is going to be at the council office a week from Friday and Saturday, and we're looking for scout units to and/or even families in scouting to come up and participate. If you're interested, let me know. Happy to set you up with a time. There's no charge. All right. Any questions about this before we move on to more core ham radio stuff? W2TTTK2BAR. Okay. Well, with that dispensed with, KD2BKD, another father of boys. I don't think you have daughters either. W2TTT.
Okay, this is KD2AD. The question I have is, I'm just going over some of the programming of my radios, and my radios are working, but I also noticed that in some car receive PL tones. Mid PL tones are there, but I'm just wondering what advantage is there going to be, or disadvantage, to putting in the received PL tones on certain radios. I would think that if it's a digital radio and I put the PL tone in there on the analog side, when the digital communicates, I'm not going to hear that, which could be a disadvantage. As if I wanted to use that frequency, I don't want to, if somebody's using it analog. But my question is the PL tones, the purpose. KD2BKD, back to W.
Okay, that's a great question. So, there are advantages and disadvantages. So, the advantages. Number one, if you have the propensity for hearing signals from afar due to propagation, you won't have to listen to the other repeater. Number two, if you drive through some noisy areas, you hear the noise bursts from all the areas as you pass through your commute driving around. And as you kind of hinted, if there's a digital operation going on, I have to listen to the saw of tilt. Those are all worthy reasons for implementing PL on your receiver. Having said that, you might consider the disadvantage. That is, you won't know when the band is open. One. Number two, you'll become unaware of noise bursts and things like that that actually block the repeater from being heard. It'll just show up as a dropout. And number three, if someone doesn't have PL, you won't be able to help them figure out what the PL is or whatever if you don't listen in the clear. I tend to listen in the clear. lot of stuff going on that's annoying. I'll have a second memory, which I'll program, which will have the received PO in it. That's what I do, and that's pretty rare, actually. But most of the time I just deal with it. So that's my answer. Anybody else have any thoughts? GTBR.
NJ2BS, repeat.
N2SHO with a comment.
Go ahead, Ali.
Gordon, what you said is completely true. I just want to add one more thing to it. I would believe the main function for VLTOL on the receive would be if that radio is used on the input of a repeater. So pretty much that repeater wants to only repeat what's coming to it with that BL tone. So definitely if that radio is working as input for a repeater, you definitely want to put a BL tone on that. Back to that.
Yeah, if it's a personal kind of, like you're setting up a radio as a personal repeater, that's probably a good idea. Just be advised that while this repeater has PL available to it, I've turned it off on the input. We haven't had the input on tone in over a year on this repeater, with very little negative, you know, conditions or problems. So I always wanted to see if I could operate this repeater without PL and peacefully coexist with my neighbors, i.e. not have to listen to them and all the junk. And it seems to be working out just fine, so I'm very pleased. My one-year experiment is long past, and I've just left it that way. I mean, I can turn it back on if I really need to, but there's no pressing thoughts. What's even funnier is I have all the commands on a command sheet that I actually took a picture of, or two pictures of, and I keep in my phone. So if I need to turn on and off a function, I can't remember what it is, I can just pull up the graphic and refer to it as a document. It's pretty easy. But a personal repeater, like let's say you're repeating it into a repeater or something like that, or your repeater better, and you're using radio as kind of like a crossband repeater, it's very, very essential to run. Absolutely.
Okay, very, very good about those comments. I'll just leave them without a received tone, and if I get problems, I'll set up a second channel. That's a very good idea. So this is Jack Dinette.
Very good. Hey, Ali, can I put you on the spot? By the way, Bob, thank you for that question. That was a good question. Ali, can I put you on the spot and kind of have you summarize the simulated emergency test from last weekend?
Wow, all right, gentlemen. Okay, last weekend, Bergen County, as well as the same county, conducted a joint trial for the simulated emergency test. Gordon, of course, is the district emergency coordinator for Bergen County, and myself, November 2, Sierra Hotel Oscar, is the Passaic County emergency coordinator. We worked very close, hand-to-hand, on that simulated emergency test. We had a total of 11 nets ran within 48 hours, almost 48 hours, where 9 of them were analog nets, and we had one digital net where we were passing traffic using the MT-63-2KL protocol, and we had another coordination net. Let me drop. We were making simulation the power outage scenario due to a storm damage, and we had a good number of stations checking in, reporting downed pole numbers, situations that required medical conditions that require immediate supply of power, whether that's generator, batteries, or whatever. And I believe we did very good with that. And we had every single station that checked in during the whole simulated test. Every single station had emergency power with them, whether that was a backup battery, vehicle battery, solar power. So that was very good to know. We pretty much are covered in case of emergency. We have health operators who can operate without power, so that was definitely good. I believe that was or at least that was most of it, I believe. So, Gordon, you want to add something? And to the show, back to you.
Yeah, I could add a few things to those. You know, number one, Ali did yeoman's effort on coordinating a lot of the nets. I mean, the majority of the nets. I think I did a third of them and he did the other two-thirds. We thought we were going to be splitting it three ways, but that was not to happen. But Ali did a fantastic job in coordinating it. It you know, it becomes infectious, so people, we use three repeaters. We use this one. We use NJ2PC, which is on Garrett Mountain, and we used, WO2X repeat in Montclair, which is right on the Passaic border at Montclair State College, so that's pretty good. And we used 444-100 in Paramus, which is the BCSMA 440 machine to pass digital traffic, and it worked out exceedingly well. It really did. It was a good thing. And I was surprised as to how many guys had emergency power. You know, obviously vehicle is the primary normal emergency power plus batteries. But a number of people had solar, a number of people had generators, and it was just fantastic. But it was very good and very revealing. And we're going to do some other things in the intermediate periods to juice up activity, etc. So, anybody have any questions about the simulated emergency test?
W2JK?
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Yeah, well, one thing is dodgeable in this spot. I also have a
NJ2BS repeat.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate that I have quite an array of bests of you know, batteries. I mean, probably solar panels, for that matter, batteries too. But you know, they range from the little 15 watt a notebook page size panel that they use, plug into a cigarette lighter of a car fridge to keep the battery up, so that way the vices inside the car don't totally melt the battery. 15 watt tiny guy bar just to maintain the charge on the battery. I've got a 30 watt panel, a 50 watt panel mount back, kind of a walk up. That pinch, you can strap it across a 12 volt winding. You know what it's doing, and you can actually certainly put it right across the steel lead acid. It'll be fine without even a charge controller. And then I've got the two 220 watt ones on the trailer, which is pretty cool too. So you know, there's lots of alternatives. In addition, I have a generator and a variety of batteries, everything with steel lead acids too. Of various sizes to two different chemistry lithium. I have the A123 battery pack, a pretty stout one at that, a 4S4P type stack. And then I have a bioenergy power 17 ampere hour battery, which I really like. I think my next one's going to be a 30 or 40. Those are lithium ferrous oxide, and they're just wonderful. They really are much nicer than and safer to use than the A123 packs. So, anybody else want to talk about their emergency power capabilities?
Net control, this is KD2 Oscar Bravo Bravo. You guys have a clear copy, or am I just making a lot of static?
You're copyable, Jason. Go ahead.
I personally have a Goal Zero Nomad 7 solar charger, small like notebook size, and chartered a Guide 10 little AA battery charger in about 2.5 hours and fully charged four AA batteries. And I think that's great for something like an AGT that can has AA battery capabilities. I've used it and tested it pretty thoroughly, and it's extremely reliable. It's about $115, so it seems like a decent investment for anyone wanting to explore that option. So I'm going to pass that along. Back to my control.
BW2TTTK2BAR. Very good. Yeah, you and Don both highlighted a point which I kind of overlooked and I should probably highlight. And that is that you have the ability to take a radio or a device, charge some batteries, and plug them into, let's say, an HT or something. So whether you have the battery case, you know, for an HT, or you have a way to frame up a pack and put power through the side of the HT, you know, through some auxiliary connector, that's so important, because your one pack may run out, and then what? And you're out of luck. So I have, for instance, the little tiny coaxial power plug for the Kenwood THF6. I have a couple of those cables, and I put in directly 12 volts. Sometimes I'll let it float down to about 11, but the bottom line is I've even run those radios for a brief period off of a 9-volt battery just to listen. I ran it off a 9-volt battery, screwed into the side. It worked fine. You can transmit, but you have to transmit extra low power, and that's 50 milliwatts. Sometimes that's enough, but oftentimes it's not, but pretty exciting stuff when you consider. Anybody else? Okay, what about antennas? What do people have in the way of antennas that they can set up? I mean, we have antennas on our homes, we have antennas on our cars. But beyond that, what do you have? Anybody want to talk about this?
W2JEK.
Mr. Don.
Okay, in the car, I have a quarter wave mag mount, which I usually keep in the car. I don't usually have that antenna on the car. I very seldom use the radio in the car. A few times I do, I put the mag mount up on the roof and the quarter wave, and that's what I'd use. I also have a 5/8 wave mag mount down the cellar, which is what I used to have in the car until I got sick and tired of putting it down every time I wanted to put the car in the garage. So that's just sitting there, and that's still usable if I wanted to go into some other location where I needed the extra gain of the 5/8 wave. Back to net.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. I wouldn't know what to do. Well, actually, I can park my car in the garage. Although right now I have a 2-meter only antenna that's really super high gain, so it really sticks out. Normally, I use a dual band, a 2-meter 440 antenna. If I want to go in the garage, I just hook the gain antennas on a little hook that's on my roof rack, and that works out well. Allows me to get into a standard garage, not a problem. And all my mesh stuff is short enough to be fine as well. That's not a big problem either. Anybody else?
W2JEK.
Don.
Yeah, one thing that I do have in the car, I have a General Motors car that has the OnStar feature, which is basically a cell phone hooked into the audio system of the car. So if the car is running, I can use that to make telephone calls. In other words, enable me to call a telephone number. I do have a touchtone pad, but it uses voice commands, so I can press number 1 for making this report, or 2 for this report, or whatever. I just using voice, I can connect, make a connection that way.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Sure, and that's got the shark fin antenna probably on top. Very good. One of the things I've been using for portable operations, if it's modest, is they have these $30 tripods you can get at Guitar Center or Sam Ash Music or one of those, and you can have a good old time with those. You can set up an antenna nicely on that, just a vertical if you need something that doesn't have to be extraordinarily high. I've also taken some of the military poles and slid them over that tripod, and they're a little loose, but they're fine. You can go up about 10 feet or maybe 15 if it's not too windy with that. You can go higher with that, but at that point I would recommend guying it or somehow fastening it to make sure it doesn't tip over. But I've done that as well. Makes for a nice little mount. The other thing I did was I have an appliance, I think some of you have seen it. It plugs into the 2-inch receiver in the back of my car. And basically it's a pole that's about 4 feet high, and it basically, or about 3.5 feet high, I guess. And on it is a, or parallel to it is a military pole that I've got hinged at the bottom and pinned at the top. And basically, you can pull the pin at the top, put a stack of military poles in, put the antenna on top, and then walk it up and pin it. And so, use that as a way to get an antenna 25, 30 feet in the air without a tree. Pretty awesome stuff. It works really well. Anybody else?
W2JEK.
Mr. Don?
W2LJ had a thing on his website. He went to the tripod, and it was a light stand that they use for these construction lights. They sell for about $20 at Home Depot. So that was another thought on tripods.
Yeah, I use those. The old ones that they used to sell at Lowe's were particularly good, and they actually accommodated the metal or the non-reinforced fiberglass military poles. But they no longer sell that one. They sell a new one that's certainly workable, but you can't put military poles on to extend it. You have to use it as is. But these stands that I was talking about, I got at Guitar Center, were for either lights or speakers, and both are attractive. So either or, it's a pretty exciting and very useful. So whether you go to the home store or whether you go to a music place, there's plenty of options like that in the $20 to $30 range, and that's the point. How about anybody else?
And door control.
Ali, go ahead.
Well, for my antenna portal, I'm using a quarter wavelength mag mount antenna. It's dual bander, 2 meters, 70 centimeters. I believe that was the Diamond NR77. I put that on the top of my car when I'm driving. And I'm running 25 watts. A VTech tri-bander radio on the car. It does 220, although I don't transmit with that yet. At home, I'm actually also using a mag mount, but it's a half wavelength on the 2 meter, and it's 5x8 wavelength on the 440. It's the Diamond MR770 as mentioned, put on a 2x1 sheet, metal sheet on top of my jack. And my question would be for you, actually, for HF antennas that can be somehow worked indoors, because I live in a very restricted apartment complex that don't allow anything to be outside of my apartment. So I really want to get on HF, but I can't have an antenna. So that would be actually my question to you. And to SHO, back to you.
Yeah, this is something that's, you know, kind of annoyed me for a long time. So ask yourself, is there anything outside that you can clip onto that's metallic and light up, you know, a gutter, a metal strip that's not grounded, anything like that. I know somebody, for instance, who had a metal frame in their window that was not grounded, which was a beautiful thing. So what he did was he literally tied the antenna feed through a tuner to the window frame. Then he went outside on the window frame and attached a wire that went along the face of the building that he carefully put behind some hedges that were along the face of the building, and he ran that way for 10 years. No one said a word. Wasn't the super antenna, but boy, he was on HF every day, and 40 and 20 meters he did, and 10 meters he did fine.
All right, Gordon, I know I have a gutter outside, but I believe that's grounded. The window frame idea sounds very good, actually. I actually have a frame where the AC is actually good, and on the outside I believe that is not grounded. But I'm not 100% sure. Is there a way to find out if it's grounded or not? Back to you.
You could probably take an ohm meter and touch one end to that, another end to the power ground on your power outlet. That would be a good start.
Roger that, yeah, that does make sense. Into SHO, back to you.
You gotta remember, ground's gonna be relative, right? In other words, you know, not all grounds are equal, and so if there's a, you know, a resistance of any kind between those two points, that means something's floating in relation to something else, and so you light up the something else, you light up the something against the something else, and away you go. Obviously, attic antennas are good if you have an attic, a storage attic above your apartment. Another one is to put a loop in the apartment, like a 2-foot loop or a 3-foot loop, and spin it around. They're hard to couple, but they do work. Other things that people do are they'll put an auxiliary battery in their car and run the equipment in the car and wirelessly connect to the to their car and operate their mobile rig remotely from their apartment. I've seen that done too. Over.
NJ2BS. Repeat.
Well, I'm not really sure about the car thing. I don't think I can put like a very lengthy whoop or something on the car yet. I'm still using Mac mounts because I don't want to drill in the car or anything, so I kind of avoiding that option for myself, but the loop, okay, here's my second problem with the loop, actually. I'm on a ground floor, so I don't have any elevation, and I believe if you're going to do a loop or even a dipole or inset antenna, you have to have some height from ground. So I'm mainly looking to work the 10, 20, and probably 40 meter spans, but at least the 10, 20, so what kind of height should I be looking for?
Well, to your point, you're generally correct, but Number two, I have all that stuff on my roof, and there's not a hole in my roof. Everything is set up to be, you know, bolted to the roof rack. I mean, absolutely everything. The mesh stuff is all passive PoE at 12 volts or 13 volts, and is fed through a Cat 5 cable, and the RF antennas that have to come in.
Antennas were
absolutely monstrously large, and everyone, including the realtor, had this monstrously large mast and monstrously large TV antenna, a little tiny 3-element 6-meter beam, and a tiny 2-meter beam, a 5 or 7-element 2-meter beam. And this lady brought the force of the building inspector down on me, and needless to say, I was not happy, to say the least. I was appalled, and I was appalled because of the selective enforcement. So I have basically a very aggressive attitude toward these kinds of things, and the good news is my wife in a million years won't move into an HOA. So that's a beautiful thing. Anybody else?
K2BAR, WA2ISC. When I was in apartments, I usually would get the top floor of a garden apartment, and more often than not, there was an access hatch to the crawl space above the apartment in a closet or something, and I strung antennas up there. Over.
Well, that's right, and that's a great way. I mean, it's a compromise, but I mean, Mark NCMH has a you know an attached home in a condo complex, and he has a repeater antenna up there. He's got other antennas. He's got his mesh node, all kinds of things. You probably, if you're on APRS, you probably have seen N2MH. It dominates the Route 3 and Route 280 corridors, all the way into the city and beyond. So it's quite impressive. And his antenna is actually in his attic.
K2VAR, KD2OBD. I read a lot online about an antenna called the Alex Loop, Alpha Lima Echo X-ray Loop, one word. And I don't know how, I can't validate any of the reviews on eham.net, but a lot of gentlemen have success using this antenna. 10 through 40 meters, mounted on a tripod in their living rooms. Like I said, I cannot validate how well they work. I do not own one. I have my tech license. And, I was just researching them and find that interesting. They want to research that, Ali. I don't know if that'd be something. You could probably make one for a lot less than you're selling for, but the Alex Loop, you'll find some interesting reads online with that.
Alex Loop is a great antenna for what it is. It may be limited by virtue of some of the factors that Ali mentioned, being on the first floor and such, but if you stand near the window, maybe 3-4 feet from the window, it might work pretty well. You might have to orient it in various ways. But, yeah, that has definite potential. I mean, it works obviously better in free space, and it doesn't work as well as especially on transmit, it doesn't work as well as a full-size dipole, but it still has the ability to suppress noise. After all, it is a loop, therefore it has nulls and the like. So, you know, it's a well-thought of antenna for good reason.
K2BAR, WA2IC again. Maybe if your apartment manager will let you set up a dish antenna for DirecTV or one of those satellite services, you can just put up a dish and use the antenna feed-in wire for that as a random length wire for HF antenna work. Over.
Ali, did you get that?
I was just thinking about whether I can do that or not. I'm not really sure if they allow such thing like satellite dishes or not. I don't recall seeing any in this apartment complex, but I'm not 100% sure if they allow it or not, to be honest. I'm going to actually check out until I show back to you.
Okay, so let me give you a hint on that one. That's a really good suggestion, Bob. So you can do a couple of things with that. Number one, by law, they have to accommodate you to allow you to get satellite if you want it. They cannot prevent you. They also have to allow you to get over-the-air television, without cable, if you so desire. So if you want to just have an over-the-air antenna, they have to allow you that. That's built into the law. You could use those as transmit antennas if you so desire. The other thing you could do is that, and I've seen this done, where someone has set up a quarter wave 2 meter antenna and a quarter wave 440 antenna on the mount of the dish, and just taken extra cables and bundled them together and brought them in to give them cables for the ham radio. When someone asked what it was, it says, "Oh, I decided to add lightning protection to my lightning rod," and no one ever knows anything.
That's actually a very good idea, to be honest. I'm definitely going to ask the management for that. Hopefully we can work something out with them. Again, thanks to everybody for the information, and to SHO, back to you.
Yeah, go look up the law on the over-the-air antenna rights for apartment dwellers, because unlike ham radio, they have to accommodate a small satellite dish. They have to accommodate an over-the-air antenna. And one of the other reasons, besides cost of the over-the-air antenna, is that you can insist on getting it over the air, because in case the cable goes down, number one, and number two, because the quality is better over the air generally than it is over the cable or satellite system for the local TV, okay?
Roger that. Yeah. Back to you.
W2JEK.
Don, go ahead.
Yeah, years ago, we had a antenna, it was a regular TV antenna fed by twin lead that came down into our cellar of our house. It was mounted up on the roof, and we used that twin lead. My father used that with a QRP rig and made contacts, so I know something like that does work. The twin lead is just tied together and used as a random wire, and one thought about that too is the the indoor antennas work. My father had a 20-meter dipole in the roof of the house where we lived down at Hillside. Of course, you really had to be available to get into the roof. I know that we can't do that from the ground floor. But that's one thing to do, is have a over-the-air antenna. One thing I do know that about these regulations for the over-the-air antenna, you can put something as high as 12 feet. In other words, if you put a mast, say, 12 feet high, you can't be any more than 12 feet high above the top of the roof. I think that's the way the law is written. But you can put a mast up with an antenna on it, at least. Not something that has to be right on the roof. It can be a couple feet off the roof, too. So that might be an advantage to know that. Back to net. W2JK.
Yeah, good idea. So it's something to think about. Just to put it in perspective, and when the DirecTV guy comes to install it, you take him aside, you hand him a $50 bill, and you say, "I need these cables parallel to yours, and screw this on wherever you can. Here's a drill." In fact, they'll have their own drill, but you get the point.
That's funny, but that's a very good idea, actually. Yep. I guess it's the only way that's going to work out. Back to that.
Yep. There are ways to skin the cat, as they say. Alrighty. Anybody else with comments?
W2JK.
Okay.
Mr. Don.
I was at the, you may have seen it at the West Portable Bay. I had a thing called a rock loop. Not expensive to build. It was a bunch of junk I had around the house. 34 inches on the side, I think, or something like that. Capacitor, there, but capacitor on one side, and then a little 50.2 toroid core with a, as a transformer from the 50 ohms to the low impedance. I think it was 20 ohms, 20 corns on the coax side and four turns on the antenna side. And then there was a tuning lamp that we used from a Christmas tree bulb that was parallel to the wire itself. I did not make any contacts with it, but I think that's because of poor purification on that day. But I have made contacts with it down from Pennsylvania, leaning it against my mother-in-law's dining room table to a contact station down in the Caribbean. So I know it has some possibilities. Back to net, W2JEK.
Yeah, that's marvelous. It really is. These are all good options. Just need to play with them a little bit and see what makes sense. And I think you'd be amazed. Is it going to perform like a THF6? I mean, a THXX? No. But a few things will. So, you gotta be able to think it through as to what you got and, what you can deal with. But, like anything else, it will settle out over time. And just have to, number one, be patient. Number two, be creative. And as I said, with a little planning and, got everything ready to go, including a $50 bill, you'd be amazed what you can get done. Just don't try to take care of the building management that way, because they're humorless. That's not going to work. But the DirecTV guy probably will be helpful, because, they get paid by time and jobs, so you want to make sure that they understand that their time is respected.
So very happy with that, Gordon. Yeah, I'm going to actually double check with that. First, I'm going to speak to them just to make sure that they allow some transitions over the roof. And then would be the actual technician who would come to install that. But that does actually make lots of sense. I'll try that. And to SHO, back to net.
To SHOW2TTT and K2BAR. Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that most of the installers for DirecTV and the like are independent contractors. So they literally get paid by the job. So if you don't if you don't have a way to get them paid for their time, then you're just complicating, their world and for no return on their time. Because for them, time literally is money. They also get evaluated as to how many jobs they do, so they get better jobs based on how many jobs they can get done and how efficiently they can get done. So amazing enough, the ones who are most productive get rewarded with the best opportunities, etc. It just seems that way. Anyway, let's see what else is going on. I don't have anything more. Anybody else have anything for the net? Oh, I do have one more thing. I'm sorry. Hold on. Promise a mesh status real quick. We got the cable lengths for both sets of nodes that we're planning to put up at William Patterson, and we're going to get the one set squared away in the next week or two, and then after that it'll
it'll be a matter of installing.